So let me step back into the presentation slides. Thank you for participating on this. And where am I? There we are. Okay. And I'm going to wrap up a little bit on two topics. One is on systems thinking. And this repeats some of the stuff, but if you watch the video from last year, I just want to be clear on some of the systems thinking concepts that are pretty basic, because people often know what it is. So,
first definition, systems thinking is a perspective on parts, wholes, and their relations. The reason that systems thinking is pretty general is everything in our world is parts and wholes. And we don't often think about it, so a long time ago I was running business strategy workshops in China. I had a translator doing this sort of stuff. They understand parts and wholes. The Greeks understand parts and wholes. It's, you know, this is philosophically pretty good for a long time. Some of the terms that are used, you have the idea of function, which is contribution of the part to the whole. So you have a function, which is generally a non-living system, and you have a role, which is a living system, but a person has a role in the system. And you have the containing whole. So when we're talking about mobile as a service, I'm saying, well, where does that fit into a bigger system? And we're talking about relocation, as relocating, right? How does relocating fit with other things? If we're talking about mobility as a service, I'm brainstorming at this point and making stuff up as I go along. Does mobility as a service help tourism? So if people don't have a destination in mind, is there a mobility as a service where it'd be like a guiding service or, you know, something like this? Someone comes to town, they sign up, and you can get an automated guide that would automatically do this. I remember that when I was, quite a few years ago, I used to go on cycling vacations, and my friend suggested we go to Holland. And when you go to Holland, they used to have, I don't know if they still do, I assume they still have the VVV, so it's part of the Tourism Bureau. And you go and you say, I want to have a bike vacation. They ask you, how many towns do you want to go to, and how hard do you want it to be? How far do you want to bike every day? And so it's like, oh, I'm going to bike, you know, 20 miles a day, and we want to go to three places. And so they would arrange all the hotels and the rental bike and everything. They move your luggage for you, and you show up on the first day, you get on the bike, you have your luggage, the van goes ahead of you, you bike for the day, you end up at a hotel, you have dinner, you have breakfast, you get on the bike the next day, go. You know, could that be part of mobility as a service? So there's a containing whole, and what happens is that when you think about the containing whole, you start thinking across systems. So I just started this, and we started talking about mobility as a system, but there's a bigger system that mobility is in, and I started talking about a bike service that was on the side. And the reason you want to do this is that you want to think bigger, not smaller. You want to think, people tend to think inside of the system, but you start to think what the bigger system can come along. So function, contribution of the part to the whole. The second part, structure is an arrangement in space. And we've been talking about building architecture. People normally think about building architecture as arrangement in space. That's pretty common. Process is an arrangement in time. That's a little harder to think about because you have this change over time. But systems are essentially usually these three things. When we look at system as a whole, there is a behavior. Now here's a skill testing question. It's kind of abstract. Which comes first? Process or structure? Okay. Which comes first, process or structure? This is a very abstract question. Yes.
Process.
Why does process come first?
If you think about this picture, and if this puzzle will turn this way first, it doesn't. The part B doesn't turn the other side.
You're right. Process comes first, and I'll tell you why. If you look at a mountain, People think a mountain is structure, but the mountain also changes. So a structure is the slowest changing process ever. We think of mountains as structure, but mountain is actually process. It's just that we don't see it in our lifetime. We don't see it change. It took me about 8 years in the system society before I got that question. And then it's like, oh, is it obvious? I go, no, it's not obvious. So that's why when you actually do stuff, like when you do services, services are more process oriented, because every time you do a service, it generally serves something different. When you do products, they're more structurally oriented because they do the same thing over and over again. So there's all these sort of hidden things that you get when you're inside of systems thinking and thinking about services and products. In authentic system thinking, synthesis precedes analysis and the containing whole is appreciated. Synthesis is putting things together. Analysis is taking things apart. We were talking about parts and wholes. Synthesis is putting things together. Design thinking actually does a lot of that. Designing is about putting things together. Science does a lot of analysis. It takes things apart. And the question when you deal with someone, and I meet a lot of people who claim to be system thinkers, and I talk to them and I go, wow, it's a really bad system thinker. Russ Acuff says that a good system thinker, synthesis precedes analysis. Number one, identify the containing whole system of which the thing to be explained is a part. So we're talking about mobility as a system, mobility as a service. If I'm interested in mobility as a service as a system, I'm actually less concerned about what mobility as a service is. I'm interested in the environment around mobility as a service. Like, why is it that people are even interested in mobility as a service? There must be something in the bigger system that's not being satisfied. After you've done that, explain the behavior or properties of the containing whole. So, what is the containing whole for mobility as a service? He's had time to think about this, and now he's going to think about what he has to write in his thesis. What is the containing whole for mobility as a service?
I'm thinking that there's different perspectives, and from that one, using the different perspectives, you would have different containing holes. But
okay, how are give me some of them.
Yeah, well, transportation system. You have, looking at the environment, you would see cars parked on the street 95% of the time, like I said already multiple times here.
Okay, so that's
the behavior that we're looking at, and then we have people thinking about how do we solve that.
Okay, so the one of the containing systems for mobility as a service is vehicle ownership system, right? So we would not have a problem if you have a free bike system, anyone can pick up a bike anytime and then drop it off anytime, and that was working fine. Then you might not need that sort of mobility as a service then, because the containing whole would already have contained it, already solved the problem. Any other ones you want to try, or? Okay, so it's interesting and challenging to think about the containing system. That's the fundamental of system thinking, it's the hardest part. The usual example when I talk about this is, if you talk about a tram system, in Toronto we have streetcars, we have a tram system here. If the trams are not coming frequently enough, it doesn't really help to yell at the driver. The people you want to yell at are the people in City Hall who haven't given you enough budget so you can drive, you can have more frequent tram service. There's a containing whole of government and cities around the tram system. Yes, you go inside, you can say there's one bad driver, but most of the time I find that people in the service system are actually trying to do the right thing within the constraints they have. And they're constrained by all the other factors. So if they had more money, if you had a nuclear system and you gave them more money, they could do more, right? So there's a containing system involved. So the third part is then explain the behavior properly, the thing to be explained in terms of role or function within the containing wall. That's when you start digging into the system and understanding it. So you work from the containing hole into the system. That's why in the pattern language, we had both the containing system and the contained system. We're looking bigger and smaller at the same time.
Actually, for mobility as a service, another containing system would be the urban planning system. How do you plan cities? Because if they were more tightly fitted, you might have just, you would maybe walk everywhere.
Good. Good. Okay. Now, this other side, which is panarchy theory, and JP and I have been asking about this, just talking about it, we recognize them now.
There's this idea from ecology that you go through these cycles, and the usual way I describe these is like startup companies. So you start off with resources with high potential and low connectedness. So this is kind of like up here in the alpha stage where it is a garage shop sort of operation, garage shop business. They go through a cycle where it comes down for exploitation. The potential goes down and the connectedness is not yet together. So they form and they start off in the beginning of what's called exploitation phase. So it goes from being a hobby to being a little business. It scales up. It grows, you start gaining a lot of business, and you enter into conservation phase when you've got a stable business. It has connected, it's now a complex system, as opposed to being a complicated system, because this side is more complicated, this side is more complex. And then eventually the system dies, because as a complicated system, it runs out of resources, and it's released, and it comes back through. And then people, the company shuts down, the people get released, they go back at the beginning and starting up new businesses. So there's this idea of panarchy, which is used, and the way they do it, you can think about this in terms of nature. In nature, what happens is you start off with a seed, initially it gets planted in, it starts growing into a small mangrove or into bushes, stuff like that. It goes up, gets into the tall trees, you get into the forest, and there's a fire, and then it all collapses and it goes back into seeds and gets started all over again. They have these two ideas though, which is the larger and slower system and the smaller and faster system. And the idea of remember and revolt. So when the forest breaks down, the forest burns down, how does nature regenerate the forest again? It has what's called these remember functions, so it has large and slow things happening. You've got things happening in the soil, you've got nature, you've got animals coming into the area and bringing in seeds. You've got very slow things that outside of the system before that come into effect. So nature remembers how that forest was created the first time, and it recreates it. You have small and fast things happening within it. So you may have there are some times when a forest restarts, there are certain types of plants that grow very quickly because the trees can't recover that quickly. So you'll get grasses growing and things like that that are small and fast, and eventually the larger scale thing will come back. But the central idea and the part that people need to take away from panarchy theory is that when you're thinking about a service system, there are multiple stable states. So you could have mobility as a system done as a single business, a single person running the business, or you could scale it up into a big enterprise. It's not that there's just one way of doing it. And scale makes a difference. When you're designing a system, you can design a small system, or you can design a big system. If you're doing pattern language, what happens if you have a large number of patterns in the catalog? A small system may not need all the patterns. So if we're building a house, the idea of a balcony is in the pattern language. But if you're building a one-room house, the idea of balcony is, I don't need a balcony. So there's different scales that come to play in the system and different things that will come to play in different patterns. And when you scale something up, there's a legacy of growth, and when you scale something down or when it collapses, there's also these things happen. So the trick here, and thinking again about when you get down to the basic ideas of systems, we tend to think about structure because we can see structure and we can see the world, but it's still harder for us to see changes over time. And so thinking about process thinking and thinking about things that grow and then die, thinking about living systems is a different frame. It takes a little bit of adjustment to get to, but eventually you'll end up talking about the services and how the services change over time. That you'll have to start off with a small service, provide some basic features, then it grows, you add more features, you find out what customers want, you can split into multiple systems, you can be complicated, you can be complex. All these sorts of things come into play.
Okay, we have 8 minutes left. I'm going to talk a little bit, I'm going to skip this one actually. I'm going to talk about errors.
I'm going to skip the stuff on. I'm going to talk about errors because this is something I've learned fairly recently. Because you're about to, if you are going to create a system or you're going to change a system, one of the things you're going to deal with is whether you're making a mistake. When you do an intervention, there's a possibility to make a mistake. And it's good to make a mistake because you can learn from those mistakes. But there are different types of errors. How many people know about type 1 and type 2 errors? Statistics? Do this? Okay. In statistics, what happens is that you get a sample of data and you say it represents the world. So I'm the prof, I'm the teacher that talks about drug samples, drug testing. So you're going to bring a new drug to market. You do testing on it, and there's various errors you can make, because when you test a drug, you're taking a lot of populations of people, you're trying to make sure it doesn't kill people, does the drug actually work or does it not work? So you do the statistical test and you get the first type of error, which is a false positive. Okay, I say this drug works. It could be that the drug actually doesn't work. But when you're actually doing the testing, it works. That's a false positive. That's what he calls a type 1 error. The type 2 error is false negative, which is I'm doing drug testing, the drug doesn't work. That's my test say the drug doesn't work. But actually the drug does work. You've now made an error because the drug works, but your testing shows it doesn't work. When you go into problem solving, this is generally the sort of type you get, the type 1 error and the type 2 error. Because you already defined the problem, and then you're saying, does a solution solve the problem or not? And you can't know the whole world. This is why we do research and we do science. It's because you're testing against it. There's a type 3 error, which is what he calls tricking ourselves. Unintentional error is solving the wrong problem precisely. I'm going to take mobility as a service as an example right now. Are you solving a problem that needs to be solved? We can do mobility as a service. Is it a problem worth solving? I don't know. And if we actually start working on mobility as a service, and it's not a problem worth solving, we're tricking ourselves. We've made a mistake because we're asking the wrong questions. That's why in the pattern form, it's posed as questions, not as statements or assertions. Because we want to make sure that we're asking the right questions. There is, however, a type 4 error, tricking ourselves. Intentional error to solving the wrong problems. This is through malice, ideology, overzealous, self-righteousness, or wrongdoing. This comes from the original thing at the top, which this is from Thomas Pynchon, if they get you asking the wrong questions, they don't have to worry about the answers. This is the Donald Trump phenomenon. Donald Trump is actually quite interesting in that he's controlling, because Crooked Hillary, the email server, people stop focusing on Donald Trump and they're focused on something else. And so I'm really interested in this because as we look at services and we spend time, we start working on service systems, the first question we'd ask is this service system worth working on? And why are we doing this? So we need to reflect about whether it is the right thing to be working on. Is it worth spending our lives, our careers, our time on these sorts of things, on the services that are on the service system? And it could be that someone is trying to do something for a particular reason, tricking us. We have a Donald Trump. We have there's a very short book. I don't know if people see this book called On Bullshit. There's a good book called On Bullshit. It's actually, this is an actual philosophical work. It's been published, it's been cited. And the purpose of bullshit, this is type, they cause us great type 4 errors, is we focus on the wrong thing. Now, it's one thing to be focused on the wrong thing because we actually started working on something that was genuine, that we were authentic to what we actually thought was worth doing. It's another thing about being distracted away from the issues that are at hand.
So I think that I'm going to wrap up now. Let me do this. This is at the end.
There are books. I recommend going to the library, look at the pattern language. There's actually multiple books associated with it. The pattern language is the structures on which buildings are constructed. The timeless way of building is the process for creating the buildings. And the Oregon experiment was the urban plan, the site plan for the University of Oregon, where you try to do all sorts of things. But this is kind of in the 1970s range. For those of you who want some light reading, I recommend this book, which is his last book. It actually incorporates all this stuff. So take a look at this stuff in the library. But you might want to actually read this book because it talks about trying to build a high school in Japan with the Japanese Yakuza and getting resistance from the old systems. It's kind of entertaining. But it's actually, to me, this is the most valuable book in Christopher Alexander, because in the early work, he's prescribing, do this and we'll save the world. And then in this book, yes, he's trying to save the world. And it's like, okay, it's not quite like it is when you write the books, right? So I found this one quite entertaining.
So with that, I think we'll stop. And I'll be around for a little while, but you guys have a full afternoon. This stuff is the academic stuff from the conference that you can always look at, and you can read the research paper.
Thank you for your time, and I hope that you find pattern language useful. If you do use it, please contact me, because I'm trying to figure out if this stuff works or doesn't work. Like, this is the advantage and disadvantage of being at the leading edge of knowledge, right? So you guys now have a session on how to practically use pattern language in a service system. No one else has done this. Look forward to hearing from you some more. Thank you.